Welcome to the Closet Mastery Course, creating a magical space where children love to learn. You are listening to Lesson 5, Elements of the Closet, Part 2, What's in the Closet? Your presenter is Marianne Johnson.
In this lesson, you will learn what goes in the closet and where closet materials come from. We will also talk about what to do in the event that you have not set up an educational fund for your family's educational needs. First, what goes in the closet? Anything. Anything you have around your home that you think might be interesting to your children. I want you to treasure hunt your house. Start in the kitchen with a notepad and pen. Look in each direction. What is in the cupboards and the closets? When I did this, I found a box of cornstarch. Cornstarch models the behavior of quicksand, and it's so much fun to play with. I found vinegar and soda, which cause an eruption when mixed together. I found rice. This is great fun for small children. Pour rice in a tub and supply a few spoons and cups. Rice can be colored to add to the fun. I found instant pudding. Do your kids like to finger paint? Well, this is a non-staining and yummy way to do that, right on the counter or tabletop. I also saw empty boxes and cans. Save enough until you have enough for a store. Add some play money, maybe a till, and voila, math for a few weeks' play. This is only a small part of my kitchen list. Now do every room in your home except your children's bedrooms. If an item belongs to a child, it's a no-no for the closet. However, there are always exceptions when children are concerned. Cedar, a 12-year-old, wanted a geography game put in the closet. It belonged to her and was generally kept in her room. It was played occasionally. Cedar's mom reminded her that if it was in the closet, it would only be available for structured family learning time. Yep, she wanted it in there. As mentioned in the 5 Rules of Engagement segment, when something is made special, its appeal goes up. That game, which they had for quite some time, became very interesting and was played a few times a week for a couple of weeks. The second possibility are toys. Play is one of the chief educational curricula of CORE and Love of Learning, using the imagination to build, create, and play with others. Sometimes kids use a toy to do this, and sometimes a piece of fabric will do. You need to decide if you're going to have toys. You are the expert in your home. Ask good questions about each toy. Does the toy allow the child to play, or does it play for the child? Does the fun come from the child's own efforts and thought? Who is the ultimate creator of the outcome of the play? Do you remember that scene in I Love Lucy where she and Ethel went to work in a chocolate factory? I do, and it was hilarious. There they were, unable to keep up with the conveyor belt. Chocolates were dropping on the floor. The women were stuffing them in their mouths and pockets in an effort to keep up. We can end up in that same predicament if we try to put into practice everything we hear. There are many options for educating our children. Stay off the conveyor belt, where you expect someone to tell you what to do and how to do it. We don't all have to structure our closet exactly the same for it to be right and to work. I mention this here because toys and kits seem to be somewhat controversial. Just remember that you need to do what is right for your children. Pay attention to the principles and then make your decisions about content. Let me give you an example of what I mean. One thing that I probably wouldn't choose to put in my closet would be stuffed animals. I have a bad taste about them from having 7 children who all had a plethora of them. They were everywhere, all the time. One little girl, 8-year-old Aspen, whose family I was working with, told me that the one thing she wished they had in their closet were some stuffed animals. Her mom was amazed because Aspen had many stuffed animals in her room and could play with them all the time. I asked her why she wanted some in the closet. She replied that she liked pretending with them. It was one of her favorite things. Remember that when something goes in the closet, it tends to become special because the structured learning time and the closet are kept special? I would have changed my mind if I were her parent, and I would have added a few stuffed animals until I saw that they weren't being played with anymore. 3. Materials for projects. The use of project learning is an incredible way to encourage the child to venture into new areas of study. When I think of something I learned in school, or think of a topic I would like to inspire my grandchildren with, or see something that interests me, I research it, and it leads me in all kinds of directions in a very short amount of time. Here is a topic that I didn't know much about that interested my grandchildren: rocks. As we studied rocks and how they are made, it morphed into a desire to make a volcano. So here was a project for the closet. I also want to show you how the materials for this one project can be extended into many learning possibilities for your children. In this case, I would add materials for making a volcano to my closet. Why not go all out and create a chicken wire armature and use paper mache or old newspaper strips and flour water paste to make a volcano? When it's dry, paint it, then make it erupt. Do your homework and understand why it erupts when you mix vinegar and baking soda, so you can explain if your children ask. You could have a book on Pompeii, a book on Italy, a map so that you could find both. You could get some pictures and articles on Mount St. Helens. You can see the actual eruption on the internet. Why not have the newspaper articles about the fairly recent eruption in Ireland? Get a good book of pictures of volcanoes and how they're made. Get a book on Iceland and have a map so that you can find it. If you have older children, they might be interested in seeing a periodic table because of the soda and vinegar. Help them write out what the chemical reaction would look like using the table. Now, I would have no idea of how to do that, but I did find a site on the internet where you can find that information. And that is found on my blog. All of this information was easy to find. In fact, I couldn't remember what the periodic table was called, so I just typed in chemistry chart, and voila. Let me also say that I never took chemistry, but that doesn't stop me from introducing my grandchildren to it via the closet and a great project. I can learn what I need that is age appropriate. So consider materials for all kinds of projects. 4. Books. Use your books or the libraries. Books are Annette's children's favorite item and Rachel's son's favorite item. Even books that have been in your library for a long time take on new allure when they're put in the closet. Use the book as a jumping off place for something else. Here are some examples of where books can take you and your children. Let's look at the book Katie No Pocket. It's a book for young children. It's about a kangaroo with no pocket for her baby and how she solves the dilemma. When you put this book in your closet, you can also have a book on marsupials, which is what kangaroos are. You can introduce the country of Australia and its strange animals, its indigenous people, and how they live and work with the land. You could make some art of the people, learn about their lives, what they eat, cook, and so forth. That can lead into some items on Great Britain, its penal system, and how Australia was colonized. It is Thanksgiving right now, and a good time to put information on the pilgrims in your closet. If you have a book on Squanto, you can add some popcorn to pop. Eat the popcorn as you read the book. That can lead into learning about how popcorn is grown and what makes it different from the corn you eat at dinner. One of the families I worked with got 3 books on the history and uses of chocolate. Their mom added a bag of chips, thinking that the kids would want to make cookies. What really happened was that they all curled up on the couch the whole week while their mom read to them about chocolate, and they ate the chips while they listened. A book on mask making is just brimming with possibilities. Study the book yourself. What countries do the masks come from? Have books, pictures, and activities or crafts from those countries. Study the countries and make the masks. I have a really cool book called Math, Art, Projects, and Activities by Carolyn Ford Brunetto. It has many math-related activities. When you add a book like this, make sure you have the supplies to do some of the projects, or wait and see which projects inspire your children and then get the materials pronto. Another thing you can put in your closet are kits, or you can look at kits and then make your own kits. Because kits also seem to carry a measure of controversy, let's talk a bit about them. I don't want you to fill your closet with them. A kit can be a great thing and kids love them. The problem is in the fact that they come with directions which parents expect to be followed. There usually isn't a lot of room for experimentation. Kits work when parents let go of the outcome. A perfect bar of soap isn't as important as mixing and experimenting and deciding what to do. Failure can sometimes be a great learning tool. You need to remember that kits can stifle creativity. For example, paint by number. The finished product may be more eye-appealing with the paint by number, but that isn't the point, is it? We want creativity, thinking, problem-solving going on. Sometimes kits aren't worth what you pay because the contents are skimpy and you can put them together more cost-effectively yourself. So you have to really decide if the kit is worth the cost and if it will allow your child to expand knowledge and creativity. You as the parent need to let go of the cost of the kit. You cannot say, "I paid $15 for that kit and you aren't going to ruin it." If you can't let go of the cost, don't buy it. You also have to let go of the outcome. If you hover to make sure that it gets done right, then kits are not a good choice for you or your closet. Don't abandon kits altogether, though. One of the items in the closet could be a telescope, but suppose that you have a child that is just wild about putting things together. In that case, a telescope kit might just be the perfect thing. I saw one on the internet for $14. What a great way to get a child started on experiencing some engineering. I do know a mom whose son wanted to make a telescope, and they actually started from scratch, and they didn't use a kit. I think that's a little intimidating to me. I'd probably start with the kit. And so here again, we have to look at our own situation, our own family, each individual child, and then make a decision about what is the best thing to do in our situation. A kit might get your child involved in something that will move them beyond the kit to further experimentation. So let me give you two examples, one a fictitious scenario and the other a real story. Let's say that at 12, your daughter's all about hair and makeup. You are ready to go nuts because you can't get her interested in reading or anything of value. But you remember that inspire and not require is important not just in education, but in your relationship with your daughter. So you add a cosmetics or a perfume kit to the closet without saying anything. Maybe she misses it because she isn't interested in the closet. Then her younger sister spies it and begins to inspect the contents. The next thing you know, your 12-year-old is helping her read the directions and they are off. At the local health food store or nearest bookstore or library, you have picked up a couple of books on herbs, medicines, and homemade items that include makeup, hand lotion, potpourri, and perfume. Some are available in the closet and other books are on the coffee table. That just might extend her interest beyond the kit. She is using her math skills, her reading skills, her teaching skills, and her social skills. It's always good to remember that the above scenario is what we want to have happen, what we hope happens, and that our children move from interest to a desire to know more. Remember that once the closet door is opened, you have to walk away from it emotionally and let your children do their thing. She might not use the kit, so you will have to keep adding things, thinking and praying until she does find something that sparks her interest. Better yet, listen to her and find the spark she is sending out to you. It is, after all, about her educating herself. Here is a real-life example of how kits led a child to something greater. There's an amazing site on the internet that I discovered called Connor's Kits for Kids. It's a website created by a fourth grade boy who was in love with science. That was what he wanted to spend all of his time doing. He used a lot of kits and found that they had just the kinds of problems I've been talking about. So he began designing his own kits, and then his parents helped him get a website. That was in 2004. Since then, he has been traveling to schools teaching other kids how to use his kits and how to love science. Now Connor is about 16. He has learned a lot about science, a good deal of math, how to teach, and how to run a business. You never know where a good kit might lead. And by the way, his site is kitsforkids.com. You can get great ideas for your closet by looking at kits in the store, whether or not you buy them. So for example, you might see a terrarium kit. What would it take for you to put your own kit together? 1 week you could add containers, a bag of dirt, and some plants to the closet. This could lead, and they could create a terrarium with just those few items. And then, of course, the purpose for putting the items in to make the terrarium is to hopefully interest them in other things that have to do with science. This could lead to learning about biospheres and information about agriculture, weather, human footprints, and so forth. The sixth thing that I'd like to mention that can go in the closet are academics. Parents always ask me about academics. In this particular age group, 0 through 12, is the time when play really is paramount for learning. But because most of us grew up in an educational system where we were taught academics on a timeline, we were supposed to read by a certain age, know this particular thing in math by a certain age, understand this particular science concept at this particular time, it's difficult for us to let go of that. And so academics always comes up. Parents are really worried about academics. I just want to remind you of something that Oliver DeMille said in his book, Leadership Education. The best efforts of parents will be in nurturing healthy relationships and modeling an active spiritual and scholarly life. The tools for academic learning are present, as are tools for cooking or making home repairs. And little children use them more in the context of tagging along or playing at the work of adults. If a person is forced and pressured formal schooling assignments during this phase, they can develop a hate of learning attitude or even just a dislike of studying. So when considering academic materials in your closet, it's important to make sure they are appropriate for where your child is, that they're available but not required, and that you model how fun it is to learn something new by challenging yourself, by learning new things yourself, and then talking to your children about what you're learning. I remember when I was a young girl, we got workbooks every year for Christmas. We loved them. We did math, we did science. Nobody told us to do them. They were just under the tree with the rest of our gifts, and we considered them part of the fun. And we worked on them all the time until we had finished them. And so put academics in your closet with the idea that your children at some point may be interested in them and get them out and use them. We loved playing school. You could always suggest, why don't you guys play school? And then you back off and you let them figure out how to do that. As a girl, we always had to make our own worksheets. That was laborious. It would have been fabulous if we'd had academics available that didn't come from our regular school classes, which we weren't all that interested in, that we could have utilized to play school. That would have been really fun for us. So you definitely feel free to put academics in your closet. While we're on the topic of what to put in the closet, I would like to read you a quote on play. Sometimes parents want to make sure their children aren't just playing with each other, wasting time. You know, sometimes play does look like a waste of time. They want to make sure that their kids are studying in structured family learning time, learning something of value, usually because they have in mind that they want them to fit in with their peers, and they want them to be ready to go into the adult world of work. And because we come from a system where we start teaching those concepts as early as 5 or even before, when we're not actively pursuing academics with our children, we get a little worried about that. For the age group that we're talking about, with the closet, 0 to 12, it's important to remember that play is the method of learning. It doesn't matter if it's a summer day with children roaming in a group, as in the quote that I'm going to read you, or siblings playing dress-up together during structured family learning time. So, here is the quote. For most of human history, children played by roaming near or far in packs, large and small. Younger children were supervised by older children and engaged in freewheeling, imaginative play. They were pirates and princesses, aristocrats and heroes. But while all that play might have looked a lot like time spent doing nothing, much at all, it actually helped build a critical cognitive skill called executive function. Executive function has a number of elements, such as working memory and cognitive flexibility. But perhaps the most important is self-regulation, the ability for kids to control their emotions and behavior, resist impulses, and exert self-control and discipline. Executive function and its self-regulation element is important. Poor executive function is associated with high dropout rates, drug use, and crime. In fact, good executive function is a better predictor of success in school than a child's IQ. Unfortunately, play has changed dramatically during the past half century. And according to many psychological researchers, the play that kids engage in today does not help them build executive function skills. Kids spend more time in front of televisions and video games. When they aren't in front of a screen, they often spend their time in leagues and lessons, activities parents invest in because they believe that they will help their children to excel and achieve. And while it's true that leagues and lessons are helpful to children in many ways, they have one unfortunate drawback. When kids are in leagues and lessons, they are usually being regulated by adults. That means they are not able to practice regulating themselves. As a result, kids aren't developing the self-regulation skills that they used to do. That is exactly how I played in the 50s. And there is a group of children in my neighborhood that range in age from 6 to 12, and that is how they play. All those ages mixed together on the front lawn of our apartment building, making up all kinds of games and managing one another. Whether you allow this free, imaginative play during your structured time is up to you. But it is very important for a child's overall development. It happens when little boys are moving cars around and building roads and arguing over who gets what truck and how big this building's going to be and where the fence is. It happens when little girls are playing kitchen and deciding who's going to make dinner and who gets this towel and can I have that dish. This kind of play can occur among a group of children in your home with a box of material as props. I worked with a family with three children aged 8, 10, and 12. They play this way all the time, right at home. Two are girls and one is a boy. Another mom who took a class of mine emailed me to say that she was concerned because her children just want to play dress up all the time. She didn't want to squelch them, but wondered how to get them to learn anything in structured family learning time. I suggested that she integrate their play with things she was interested in teaching them about. If you are learning about Madame Curie, be Madame Curie. If you're learning about Lewis and Clark, be Lewis and Clark. Role play what you're learning. Later, I had another thought for her and wrote, "Dear Sarah, I had another thought about your children and imaginative dress-up play. If you have reading time in your structured family learning time, that is a perfect place to let them dress up. Use your box of fabric squares. If you are reading a fiction book, stop in the chapter somewhere and let them act out that part. You could do this once or twice during each reading session. It will lengthen your reading time or have you reading less each day and acting more, but your children will love it." Sarah gave it a try, and here is what happened. "Thank you, Marianne. I tried this today. We are reading The Wizard of Oz. Of course, they all wanted to be Dorothy, but eventually they settled on at least one scarecrow. One of the Dorothys wanted to have a Greek-style costume, so she made up a side story to go with that. Thanks for a great idea." I don't know, it sounds fun to me. And how creative. I would have liked to have been involved in seeing what that side story was that went with the Greek style costume. Before we leave the topic of what can go into the closet, I would also like to comment on what seems to matter to children. When I observe children, what I notice is that the process matters more to them than the outcome. They like to engage in the act of creation for creation's sake, thinking it through, coming up with something, and then making it. Parents are usually concerned with the outcome. Will it taste good, be usable, not make a mess, and so forth. When I'm considering what to put into the closet, I remember that playing is how children learn, and the process always matters more to them than the outcome. Now let's turn our attention to what to do if you haven't established an educational fund yet. First, don't stress over the cost of the materials for your closet. Children don't care where stuff comes from, as long as it's interesting and inspiring. It is really vital that you remember that what is in the closet doesn't matter as much as time together learning, consistency, and your presence. Second, you need to realize that if you are choosing to homeschool, you are choosing to develop a budget for it. We budget for our children's physical needs, but it's just as important to budget for their educational needs. You and your spouse should discuss how you can do this. Again, don't wait to start. Don't wait until you can save $25 a month. Open an account or get a jar. Decide what you can put in each paycheck, even if it's only a dollar, and then be consistent. So what can you put in your closet that's free or that costs very little? First, use what you already have in your home. We talked about doing a treasure hunt of your home. One mom had a set of anatomy flashcards which had been on the shelf with her academic materials for a couple of years. They had been unused. When she put them in the closet, her kids were fascinated and spent a few days poring over them and talking about them. She could have extended this interest by adding some books on anatomy, some pictures to color on anatomy, or some model bodies to put together or label. Two, I'm going to share with you a secret for one way I come up with amazing and free stuff for my closet, which my granddaughters love. I use the Dover sampler. I went to DoverPublications.com and signed up to receive a sampler of the books they offer each month. Here are some examples of what I have been able to use in my closet. History, pictures and descriptions of Stonehenge, the first crossing to the North Pole with pictures to color and descriptions. I have a description of the explorer De Soto with pictures to color and pictures to color of the Vikings. I have coloring pages of an archaeologist, a firefighter, an entomologist, and other occupations. I have coloring pages of more animals and descriptions of many of them than you can shake a stick at. I have a whole series of pictures to color of animals from the Galapagos Islands. I have a hard time saying that word. I have math puzzles, brain teasers, mazes, information on authors, poetry from around the world, color pages of famous artwork by people like Van Gogh and Renoir. There are stories and fables from many different countries, historical photos, coloring pages and dialogue of Shakespeare's plays, paper folding instructions, drawing instructions, and paper dolls of historical figures, medieval times, famous people, and even figures from classic books like Alice in Wonderland. So, for example, the figures from the classic book Alice in Wonderland. There's just one. It happens to be the White Rabbit, and he has two separate costumes of clothing. Well, how fun to be reading Alice in Wonderland and have those paper dolls on hand, and also to find out a little bit about the author. Or to talk about De Soto and what country he lived in and what is an adventurer and an explorer, and then actually have a picture to color. So all of these materials were totally free. I make files on my computer and then save the information in them. Then if I want to put books on pilgrims in my closet, for example, I go to my history file and there's a color picture of the pilgrims that I can add. The books on pilgrims are free at the library. The color pages were free and sent right to me. I have materials at home for making an apron, squares of fabric for role-playing the landing at Plymouth. None of that would have cost a cent. What it does take is thought, planning, and enthusiasm on your part. The website to sign up for the sampler is doverpublications.com. And if you have any questions about how I save and file these materials, feel free to contact me at majcoach@yahoo.com. So we've talked about things that you already have at home, the Dover sampler, and three, the dollar store works. This is a great email I received from Kathy. Last Saturday, I found $1 insect items at Target. We are having a blast, and it hasn't all shown up in the closet yet. I almost passed up the big plastic insects as toys, but realized, no, they are inspiration for my little boys and models for insect body parts. What was I thinking? So don't be afraid to scour the dollar store and sales and just watch for things that can lead you somewhere else. Now, as far as these insects, all the dollar things that she purchased hadn't found their way into the closet yet, but oh my goodness, all of the wonderful books that you could have, and you can find DVDs on animals and, I mean, on insects and how they live. And if you go online, you can find all kinds of craft ideas for duplicating some of these insects. So there's just a lot of things you could do in this particular case from a few items you got for a dollar a piece. Four, you could have a junk box. Do you remember the movie Apollo 13? There's a scene in the movie that I enjoyed the most, and it came after the spaceship had a problem and the astronauts were freezing. NASA gathered all the engineers in a room, and then someone poured a box of junk on the table. And I remember that, and there was a piece that looked like it came off of a dryer. And the person who dumped the box said, "Solve the problem." And they did. You know, a box of junk can be really inspirational. And that's how my grandchildren feel when we dump the junk box out on the table. They get very excited about solving the puzzle of building whatever is in their head. In our junk box, we have real junk. We have old keys, buttons, empty thread spools, toilet paper rolls, foam cups, paper plates, paper clips, old tin foil, balloons, you name it, it's in there. Now, I do want to say one thing about the junk box. When you're doing this particular activity, it's really helpful for parents not only to stay present but to create themselves. Sometimes children need a little jump start on their imagination, so you look at the junk and you start creating something, and they'll ask you what you're making, and a lot of times they will say, oh, and they'll start creating the same type of thing you're creating. It does help to work this project with your children. Another thing is, use this project when you're learning about something. Say, for example, you are learning about insects and you dump out your junk box and you say, today, let's create insects. And that's it. That's all you say. And the idea is to look at what's there and be creative. The fifth thing you can do if you have no money and in order to start is secondhand stores. There are a lot of fun things you can get at secondhand stores. For example, if you've got boys or even girls, sometimes it's just fun to get things like old clocks or radios that they can take apart. You have them in a box with some screwdrivers and pliers, and you let them take them apart and see how they work. Of course, you can find dress-ups, books, toys. You just find a lot of things at very inexpensive prices at secondhand stores. You could always check out the lumber yard. You know, one year I helped my son make Christmas stools for his grandparents, and we got all the materials free. We got scrap lumber from the lumber yard. We got scrap upholstery material from the upholstery shop. All we had to actually buy were tacks. You can get scrap lumber, and your older children can make blocks for your younger children. If you check out print shops, sometimes you can get, you know, leftover scrap paper there really, really cheap, if not free. Another project that you can put in the closet that won't cost you really anything is scrapbooks for your children to make. And, you know, we have a scrapbook craze going on that's been going on for a number of years, and you can spend a whole lot of money scrapbooking. And I know parents who just save and save and save all the stuff. They're, you know, they're going to get scrapbooks made for their children. But I'll tell you this. If you will put your children's possessions in the closet with a few items, some tape, some paper, and let them make their own scrapbooks, they will not be showpieces, but they will mean a great deal to your children. I remember one family, one of the moms who is a scrapbook person, she does that. Nevertheless, she followed this counsel and she put her children's belongings, her older daughter's belongings, in the closet, and her two older daughters had a marvelous time creating their own scrapbooks. Another thing that you can use in your closet is plain yard goods cut into 1 yard pieces. It's really better than costumes and dress-ups because it takes far more imagination, but a piece of silver material can just be a lot of things. It can be the Tin Man from the Wizard of Oz. It can be the next superhero. I mean, children are just great at creating. Another place that you can get free items is online. There are many sites online that let you download games and pictures as well as worksheets, all for free. A sewing box is a great item to have. Scraps of material, needles, thread, buttons, all kinds of things so your children can create. You can make your own educational items, flashcards, for example. Let your children help you. Children rarely care if it looks like it came from a store, so your 12-year-old can make picture cards that your 4-year-old will just love. Consider the activity of filling your closet part of the options within the closet. Let your older children help you come up with items for the closet. Just start. Don't wait for more money, time, inspiration, or anything else. It just never seems to show up until you step out and start, and then means, materials, and ideas begin to come your way. You can always upgrade and add as you go. Remember, the contents matter less than the structure, consistency, and the parent being present. In Appendix 1 in your workbook, you will find a list of possible items that you could put in your closet. It's a huge, long list. They can either be put in for free play and experimentation, or you can choose to design other activities and learning around them. So, for example, you can put in a box of magnets and pieces, you know, metal things that can be picked up, like paper clips and hairpins. And you just have those in there, and they're just a wonderful thing for children to engage with. But you could also add a book on magnets and maybe have a couple of experiments with magnets and extend that interest out. So let's review what we've learned about what goes in the closet. You can put anything in your closet that you think will interest your children. Make your decisions on closet content by paying attention to principles and what's right for your family. Remember that children learn through play. Remember that children care far more about the process than the outcome. You need to establish an educational fund and then add to it consistently. You can obtain many materials free or for very small cost. Remember, the content matters less than the structure, consistency, and the parent being present. Before moving on to Lesson 6, complete the thinking exercises and the to-do list in the workbook for this lesson.